And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Lights out and away we AO. Welcome to No Breaks, a Formula One podcast from the No Dunks Inc. Classic Factory, proudly a part of the Athletic Podcasting Network. But today, you could say we're a movie podcast. You could say we're a NASCAR podcast. I think we're just a podcast. And today, I'm your host, Trey Kirby. I'm joined by our local F1 expert and movie enjoyer and a man who once shook Hashim Thabeet's hand. Oh, Graydon Gordian.
What a moment it was. Such huge hands on Hashim.
Oh, some of the biggest hands out there, and you got to shake them. We've also got our team principal making the right calls on the pit wall, JD. JD, what's up, man?
Hey, I'm trying to think of the biggest hand that I've ever shook.
Shaq?
Probably, yeah, Shaq. I don't know if I've hugged Shaq multiple times, but I don't think I've actually shook his hand.
I also shook Shaq's hand out, but only outside the studio one time. Hmm. I was like futzing around Turner Studios, and you guys were making a TV show, and Shaq like walked through the hall. You know, we talked for a second.
He offered it up.
He knew. I don't even remember who I was walking with, but he knew the person I was standing next to. So stop to talk to us.
Somehow I'm not surprised. It feels like Shaq knows a lot of people, and you somehow know more people than Shaq. But let us know down below in the comments, who's the biggest hand that you've ever shook? I would say Chris Webber is also in the mix. Chris Webber's got gigantic hands well. But we've got some people joining us live here in the Slipstream team, watching on YouTube, whether you're doing that or listening to the podcast later on. Thank you so much. If you want to get in touch with us, email us, nodunks@theathletic.com. Tweet to us at nodunksinc. Any of that great stuff. Let us know what you think about the movie Days of Thunder, because that's what we're talking about today. Mm-hmm. Came out in 1990, directed by Tony Scott, produced by Don Simpson and Jerry Bruckheimer. Oh, yeah. That's a loud one.
The only thunder in the movie.
Yeah.
The tagline, a young hotshot stock car driver gets his chance to compete at the top level. Pretty straightforward.
Yeah,
I would say that is what happens in this movie.
In fact, a fair description of the plot.
JD, you want to take a guess at the Rotten Tomatoes scores for this?
Ooh, I would guess that the audience score is probably high, like fresh almost. Give me a 38% top critics.
I think you nailed it.
Really?
Right?
That's
from the logo. JD.
Count it. 38 critics, 60.
38. I think you got it right.
I looked at it. I didn't.
100% accurate. Pretty great.
I had looked it up. I didn't realize you're going to. I had already looked it up, so I was cheating on that question. But yeah, JD, you nailed it.
Damn.
38 from the critics, 60 for the audience. But you mentioned it, JD. Our first question about Days of Thunder came from Skeets after we recorded No Dunks today. He said, why is this movie called Days of Thunder? There's no thunder.
I have no idea. I guess it's like, is it thundering around the track? It's the roar of the cars.
Yeah.
And that's
loud.
It's loud.
Sounds like thunder.
NASCAR races are loud.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I've been to a NASCAR race, and I thought, God damn, it's loud.
it's very
louder than
here.
F1?
Maybe louder in this era. I want to say there's older F1 cars used to be louder, like the V10 era and things like that. But I want to say maybe louder in this era.
I feel like it's higher pitched. F1 is a higher pitch.
Agreed.
You know what it also is so I've been to Atlanta International Speedway, which features in this movie. We'll get there eventually.
Oh, yeah.
And it's also, it's a small track. It's like you can see the whole track from your seat. Hmm. So you can see every car the whole time. So I think it's just constant like noise from the entire whereas like at F1 tracks are really long, really huge, and at any given moment there's only like a car or two near you, so it's not as loud. I think that's also part of it. I don't know which would be louder if you stuck the individual cars next to each other.
We gotta ask Tom Cruise.
Ask Tom.
He's been
he
in
would
an
know
NASCAR car. He's, I'm sure he's been in a Formula One car. He would know.
He would know.
Let's talk about this movie, Days of Thunder. It begins at the Daytona 500. Great place to start.
Great.
We get some quick cameos from Dale Earnhardt Sr., Richard Petty, and then immediately we're introduced to Rowdy Burns, played by Michael Hooker, the defending Winston Cup champion. That was a little bit of a throwback to me. The Winston Cup.
That was the real name of it back then, right?
That was the real name of
it. Yeah,
that
was – yeah.
This – unlike Driven, which we watched, which had to be – they didn't do. They weren't even able to do IndyCar, right? They did something.
No, but
the next level down.
It was like a second tier open wheel racing series. I forget what it was even called.
Same CART, CART.
Yeah, that's correct. That's right. Yeah,
this is very much tied into NASCAR. You can tell from all the cameos. We'll kind of get into some of the stuff that was inspired by real things that happened at NASCAR. They drove a ton of these cars that they used on actual NASCAR tracks, like actual NASCAR drivers qualified with the cars they're using in the movie, which is why to me it actually kind of looks legit at some points.
Yeah.
But there are definitely some things in this movie that stuck out to me as things you wouldn't see in a movie made today. Like, for instance, seeing a Confederate flag a minute and a half.
I absolutely noted that as well. There are like several Confederate flags.
Oh, yeah. They go Confederate flag heavy in the first 1.5 minutes here. And of course, the name of the championship is the Winston Cup champion.
The tobacco references. Yeah, exactly. You don't see the tobacco sponsorship is not as big of a thing
now. Do you still see Confederate flags at NASCAR events? You must, right?
Yeah. I think you do. I think you see them like out in the tailgating area, like in the parking lot and stuff. There might be rules about like bringing them into the actual tracks themselves, because they have tried to cut down on
that.
They
did do it.
But I think out in like the parking lot, like they can't really control that.
Yes. Yeah. I assume you're right. So we meet Rowdy on track, but very quickly we're introduced to Chevrolet dealership tycoon Tim Dalen, played by Randy Quaid, who is recruiting open wheel racer Cole Trickle, played by Tom Cruise. Dalen is recruiting Trickle to race for his team in the NASCAR Cup Series, but the only way that Dalen's going to start a team is if former crew chief and car builder Harry Hogg, played by Robert Duvall, comes out of retirement to lead Cole's pit crew.
Robert Duvall.
Harry Hogg.
My wife watched maybe the first 20 minutes of this movie with me, and when she saw Robert Duvall, she was like, that guy was that old in 1990? She was like, this guy's been old for forever.
Yes.
I was like, pretty much, yeah.
Okay, so he's he's 91 years old now. So I mean,
okay, so
I think I think he says he's 59. He's supposed to be 59 in this movie.
So he was roughly
about right,
aged.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but he was.
Wow,
was a slightly maybe weathered 59. I mean, he didn't have a he wasn't a youthful 59.
Yep. No.
Are you a Robert Duvall fan, JD?
Well, you know, I mean, he's you know, The Godfather.
He's
you know?
Yeah, terrific.
Been around forever.
Tender Mercies, I enjoyed when he was in that. Yeah, I am. And I like him in this movie.
Yeah, same.
The cast is great.
Oh, the cast is incredible.
The only weak link to me is Dennis Quaid. You just mentioned him.
Or Randy Quaid.
Randy Quaid.
Wait, Randy's the weak link? I mean, Randy has the least depth and complexity as an actor, but he is still, I feel like, a joy on screen.
Who's worse than him in this movie?
Fair. Good point. Yes, true.
Okay. fair. Yeah, I actually thought Carrie Elwes actually didn't deliver what I thought at the level I expected him to. I thought
he didn't do much.
He didn't have
give
to.
Him much yeah, to work see, with.
He's yeah, got exactly. such a punchable face, like just his smug
totally,
way about
totally.
Him under goggles and a helmet, and you still want to punch him.
Yeah,
I will say Randy Quaid does like. It is good casting to the extent that he comes off as a car salesman.
Oh, definitely.
Like,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
like,
yeah,
he's made for that role, you know.
So I'm watching this, and I'm thinking, a car dealership guy is going to run a NASCAR team? That sounds ridiculous. But apparently it's inspired by Rick Hendricks. That's just what he does. He has a car dealership and then became like one of the biggest names in stock car racing. I didn't know that.
I think that's Hendricks. You see, it's Hendricks Ford, right? I think you see those.
No, my guess is that he's Chevrolet because they said that Hendricks actually had a dealership called City Chevrolet. Back in Charlotte.
Maybe it's Chevy. He must be Chevy, though. I might be wrong.
Nonetheless, Harry's not coming back unless Cole can prove himself. So Cole does that by ripping a hot lap in Rowdy's car in a private test at Charlotte Motor Speedway. Hogs in, so he builds him a new Chevy Lumina. That's a hilarious that he ends up making of a Lumina.
Let's not just zip past Cole Trickle's entrance in this.
On a motorcycle.
Where they're talking about him and he just emerges on a motorcycle in a killer duster, might I add.
Oh, yeah.
That was just like a real fire fit right there. And as we see him, it was one of my favorite moments. We get a shot of just the iconic, just indelible character actress Margot Martindale in the background as they see her approaching in what I guess, Trey, you tell me, is apparently her first feature film performance.
That's what it says on IMDb. They would never lie to me in their trivia sections. That would be in their goofs only. But yeah, not a huge role for Margot, but nice to see her show up on screen. Three great character actors right there.
Yeah there's a lot of I mean the star talent in this shot, incredible.
Great line in this one that I hope to use going forward when talking about the NBA. Dayland, Randy Quaid is explaining kind of like Cole Trickle's bona fides from being in open wheel racing. He thinks it's super impressive, but Robert Duvall says, got yourself a real statistician there. Does he know anything about drivers? I can imagine saying that to a youngster who knows nothing about basketball. Yeah. Also like this, when they're talking about Cole Trickle coming over from the open wheel racing scene, and they're like, he's not a Yankee, is he?
Oh, yeah. They have
if you're from California, you're not a Yankee. You're not really anything.
Yeah, which.
Harsh.
Agree to agree. No, they're.
Pretty harsh. Pretty harsh.
The Yankee dig was funny.
What'd you think about Cole Trickle? First time he's ever hopped into a NASCAR stock car. He takes Rowdy Burns' car out and just dusts him on the first lap.
He's a natural talent. And that's really all he is pure raw talent.
Pure raw talent.
He doesn't know much about cars, as we discover. He does know how to turn a wheel somewhat erratically, actually. Every time you see Cole Trickle driving, he's moving the car like a child pretends to drive. Yeah. He's like jerking it back and forth in a way that is in no way representative of how you'd be driving the car. In this instance, he drives the pants off it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. Is that how it would go, though? Like if an open wheel driver are. Is it easier to drive a NASCAR?
No,
you're making
actually,
the same turn the most times.
No, but it's actually not. It's like I think that the way you approach a turn in a NASCAR car and the way you approach oval racing, I think if you hadn't been an oval – I mean, I'm not saying like nobody could do it. Like no driver would get out there and just spank it. But actually like famously like, guys who have done a lot of open wheel racing who get behind a NASCAR wheel, which happens from time to time – like need some coaching on how you attack an oval and how you go through banked corners and stuff like that. So it's, I mean, am I going to, is that like the, that's like, I don't know. It's not like the most radically, I wasn't sitting there being like, this is preposterous. Like, I was like fine with that, I guess.
So, Trickle has passed the test, which means Harry's going to build him a car. Like I said, it's a Chevy Lumina. JD, what did you think about the scene where Harry Hogg, Robert Duvall, is talking to the frame of the car? that was maybe the worst scene for me.
It was pretty bad, but you know what? Exposition, yeah.
Oh, he's going to...
Here's the thing. I'm like, this is awful and terrible. But Duvall just pulls it off.
Totally, man.
And shouts to Tony Scott because there are so many bad things in this movie that are actually way better than you think they're going to be just because the talent behind it. Like
agree.
The cast and the direction and just the way it's shot. And it's just – I bought it. I was into it. But yeah, talking to a car, I mean, I haven't seen that since Cars.
You're going to get drove so hard. You're going to get drove so fast.
It's a real good, very Gone in 60 Seconds, you know, to talk to the car. Also starring, also featuring Robert Duvall, which he's terrific in as well.
He's got lots of cars.
He burned through that Godfather money.
He had to run in some stuff. Totally.
So Cole joins the Winston Cup circuit where he has some difficulty with the NASCAR stock cars, communicating with his crew, and with Rowdy, who teaches Cole that rubbing is racing. Yeah. Is that where this came from? Is this movie where it came from? Or is that a saying prior to that?
No, I felt like this is where it came from. That's my guess, but I actually have no idea.
And, I feel the same way. It had to have at least popularized the usage, I would have to imagine. Rubbing is racing.
There's no two ways. I will say definitively that that phrase is more widely known because of this movie.
Oh, definitely. And I think Cole Trickle, he's rubbing most of the time in this movie. He's rarely driving a clean car.
Oh, you know? They're rubbing constantly. I mean, they're bumping into each other constantly out there.
The other thing I thought was interesting is that what's his team called at this point? Superflow? Is he on, like, is Superflow the sponsor or something? Or City Chevrolet, I guess, is the sponsor.
No,
right
but
away.
You're right. There's
but the
a
first sponsor to come in is Superflow.
Superflow.
Yeah,
which
that's
I
right.
Assume is oil. Like motor oil?
Yeah.
That's what I...
Yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
I liked the logo. I liked the pink and black.
Yeah,
yeah
cool.
The pink and black was nice.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
But can a new team just start in the middle of the season? They're just like, hey, we got a totally new team and a new driver, and guess what? We're going to add another one later, too.
Back in 1990, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Back in the Wild West. Maybe. I mean, you definitely see teams... I don't know. I would be lying if
that
I
was
said
pretty
I
surprising.
Knew enough about like the franchise structure of NASCAR in the early 90s to say definitively.
Yeah, there's also a good sort of as Cole is learning the ropes in NASCAR, there's a great montage of Rowdy just crashing into him at every race, which I thought was hilarious. At one point, Cole tries to pit but told, not now, we're eating ice cream.
Oh, yeah. I guess that was like a form of hazing.
It was inspired by a real-life NASCAR race in the 80s.
In which somebody wanted to pit, and they were like, you can't pit.
And it was like
a
replacement driver or something like that. So it does seem like hazing. Like, haha, yeah, we're not going to change your tires because we're eating ice cream. Weird.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, but where'd they get the ice cream? Did somebody run for it, or did they have it? Did they bring it?
No, they had it. It was in a cooler, probably.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, somebody's probably got a Good Humor sponsorship.
And they're passing out ice cream down the track.
Soon thereafter, after Cole has just joined up with the Winston Cup Series, Cole confesses to Harry that he doesn't understand any common NASCAR terminology. I'm an idiot. I don't have the vocabulary.
Oh, man. He doesn't even know, like... The back end's loose or these other things. Yeah, I mean, he is an idiot, I guess. It's actually impressive how far he's gotten in his racing career without knowing very basic car terminology.
Yeah, it seems like he was pretty well established in the open wheel scene.
That's the sense I get, is that he had been successful.
And you would have to imagine that there's some crossover in terminology, you know, on the limit.
Like,
is loose. That was funny.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah, idiot.
I don't know. I totally relate to it.
Yeah.
Totally. I've been driving a car for 20 years and I know nothing. Nothing.
True.
If something's wrong with my car, I have to literally use sound effects to, like, there's a clinky, clinky, clinky. When I'm driving,
that's
and
a good point.
There's like, it
that's
sort
a good
of
point.
Shakes and moves around. Like, so I relate to it.
That's a good point.
Okay. I mean, that's –
That's
not
a good argument.
That's fair, but he's a professional race car driver.
He is a professional.
Okay. I relate to it in my professional life because I don't know what half of this – all of this stuff is called.
They just put me behind the board and I started pressing buttons. And
that's
next
exactly
thing I know, I'm
right. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I know what a camera is, but I couldn't tell you – You know, when we start getting into the irises and the focus rings and stuff like that, I mean,
okay,
you can fake your way through a lot.
You're an idiot. You don't know the vocabulary.
I'm an idiot. I don't know the vocabulary.
But the training pays off because at Darlington, Cole uses a slingshot maneuver from the outside line to overtake Rowdy and win his first race.
There you go.
I really like this this race scene at Darlington because, first of all, a Ferrari-esque pit stop from the city Chevrolet team when their gun gets jammed as they're trying to take off the tires, which Harry then lies to Cole about, telling him they have the perfect mix to try and win here on the outside line. I also thought it was hilarious that as soon as they win this race, they have a conversation and they say, just promise me one thing. We do this again at Daytona. The biggest and baddest race of all. We worked so hard to get one barely win here. We got to follow it up by winning the biggest one next.
My favorite part of this, I forget his exact thing, but he calls into him and is like, and you know, now that I guess he knows the vocabulary, he says something along the lines of like, I'm going to draft him and then slingshot past him, which is like, I guess, I don't know, for maybe our NBA listeners, the equivalent to like, you know, Kobe coming over to Phil and he's like, I'm going to take a jump shot and then we're going to win the game. It's like, or something. It's like, he just like says that he's going to go driving and then drive faster. It's like, it's not like a strategy. It's just like the most basic, like part of like how you go about doing this. It's
like, it sounds so smart though.
Yeah, I know. And I just was like, that's such a stupid thing to say over the radio.
Yeah, but it's for the audience.
Yeah, right? They don't know.
That's a good point. They had to educate us as well.
Yeah, we're idiots. We don't know the vocabulary.
At that point, we were idiots, but now we've grown up. Okay, so at Darlington, Cole wins his first race. And in the department of things you wouldn't see in a movie made today, the crew celebrates by getting Cole a surprise prostitute.
That is, in fact, how they celebrate, with a secret surprise prostitute.
Yeah. It starts with Cole refusing to fight a 60-year-old man, which I think is nice. At one point when they get pulled over by the cop stripper, there is just an ISO close-up shot of Tom Cruise's dick. Just straight crotch shot before they go outside to the car. I'm like, okay.
Wait, still inside? That's before she grabs.
No, I think this is at the grab. They must be outside at that point.
Okay.
Is this a trope that they should bring back, JD? I feel like this happened more often in the 80s and 90s movies.
It didn't feel as weird when I first watched it in the theater in 1990 as it kind of did when I was watching it last night living room. I was like, oh, right. And then the ambiguousness of, does it end there? Or,
that is, you know, they make like, that very unclear.
Yeah, very unclear
how, like, how far this all goes.
Right.
Very
it unclear. Seemed to, the encounter seemed to come to an end, kind of. Like, oh, like they thought you would like me. And they just sort of have this awkward sort of kiss, and then that sort of seems to be the end. That would have to be the end of it. Like, would it then, whatever, all those fake cops are getting onto the truck and they're going on to the next station while Cole is having his way with this woman in the back. I don't see that happening, really. Do you? I mean, to be honest,
I hadn't thought it through entirely, it seems like maybe they just move on.
They just go down the road? Just get a ticket?
Well, yeah, I guess they just take their ticket, their speeding ticket. Yeah.
Well, I did pull you over.
Yeah, well, you were drinking illegally on the bus.
No, right.
Nonetheless, the rivalry between Cole and Rowdy intensifies throughout the season until the Firecracker 400 at Daytona, where both drivers are seriously injured in a crash. Recovering in Daytona Beach, Cole develops a romantic relationship with Dr. Claire Lewicki, played by Nicole Kidman, a neurosurgeon at a local hospital. I saw that Nicole Kidman wanted to study neurosurgery for her role, but the directors and producers told her, it's going to be a waste of time.
Yeah,
you don't need a degree in neurosurgery.
Yeah, that level of method acting. I mean, as much as Stanislavski would appreciate your commitment to the craft, I don't think that is necessary here.
This is their first movie together, though.
That's exciting. You know, love blossoms there on set. And do you think it's because of his equally forward and inappropriate gesture where then he takes her hand and puts it on his genitalia? Because that startled me. And I thought, here we go. I mean, I had thought to myself, gosh, I don't think they'd make this stripper cop scene again today. And then I saw that and I was like, they definitely wouldn't make this scene again today. Okay.
You missed the Tom and Nicole era, JD?
Do I miss the Tom and Nicole? Not really. I'm more of a Tom and Katie man, I think.
That was your – you thought that was the heyday?
Yeah. He was most excited about that particular relationship. That was the couch jumping, right?
That was
that
Katie.
That was over Katie.
Yeah,
he didn't definitely jump on any couches for Nicole.
I agree. Yeah. That was it was more of a –
How many movies did they star in together?
I only know two off the top of my head.
This and
Eyes Wide Shut.
Eyes Wide Shut, yeah. Is that it?
I think there is another
one.
I think it said there are three. I don't know what the third one is, though.
Okay.
Who knows?
Let us know if you know.
Let us know down in the comments if you know. Some pretty funny stuff, though, when they are in the hospital, because Rowdy is there, too. So at one point, the two drivers race each other in wheelchairs. Suddenly, it turns into a slapstick comedy for minute.
They're very competitive.
Very competitive. Yeah.
Against one another.
Yeah.
In lesser hands, it falls flat. It's cheesy. It's a terrible scene, but it plays. Like, it plays, right?
Yeah, it wasn't. I agree with you to the extent that when the scene was starting and I realized what was about to happen, like, oh my God, they're going to race in these wheelchairs. That is awful.
Yeah.
It wasn't nearly as bad as I thought it would be. I got to the end and it was not nearly the car crash that I thought it would be that had preceded it, which. Just to very briefly go back to, if you remember that car crash, Tom Cruise is out there, Cole Trickle is out there, a bit almost borderline committing like vehicular manslaughter. He like sees Rowdy's car and like accelerates into it, doesn't he? Kind of right. He seems to semi intentionally hit him.
Didn't
he does on that one?
Is that not that one?
Okay, so.
Or is
in,
that
in
a
the
different...
big crash that injures both of them? There's like a huge crash, right? And he tries to go around, but then he sees Rowdy's car spinning. But he explains it as something where he's like, they say when you see a car spinning, to go straight through it because it's going to spin out of the way.
Okay.
So yeah, it looks like he floors it and smashes into him. But I think
he was
I think in Cole's brain, he was thinking he'll spin out of the way, which is why he's so shook that he didn't spin out of the way.
Got it. Okay.
And now they're both
there. Because at the time I thought, my God, what a dark night. Like comparatively, like just what malevolence. What a. Yeah.
You don't know what you're getting when you go inside the mind of a Cole Trickle.
Oh, yeah, like I was like a sociopathic to do that, but maybe that explains it, yeah.
Two funny moments that may have shown up on the IMDb goofs page to me during this region of scenes is that when Tom and Nicole are meeting each other, there's a bedpan full of grapes behind his hospital bed. Like, just get a bowl. Why put him in a bedpan?
Very weird.
And then
food in a bedpan, bad.
Food in a bedpan does not belong there. Is this good? Not good. And then when Claire and Cole are chatting, and I think it's Cole is getting ready to leave. He's talking to Dr. Claire Lewicki, and he's getting ready to leave, and she hits him with his door, with her door, to her car, like on accident. Like Tom is too close in the scene. So Nicole hits him with a door,
right?
Which is probably not ideal.
I didn't notice that. I might have to go back and rewatch the entire movie. Just
that's what happens
when
you don't study, though.
Yeah, she would have known that. Like neurosurgeons have excellent, like kind of spatial, like kind of awareness, and wouldn't have done that otherwise. Wouldn't have made that acting choice.
NASCAR president Big John quickly sets a meeting to bring Rowdy and Cole together to squash their beef. Big John warns them that he and his sport will no longer tolerate any misbehavior from the two bitter rivals. You like this scene when they're at dinner?
Do I like this scene? I love this scene.
You love this scene.
And let me tell you why, my friends. JD knows why. Because it stars U.S. Senator Fred Thompson. God, I was fired up when I saw Big John, old Senator Fred come on. I think I yelled out loud. I was like, hell yeah, Fred Thompson.
I was total Leo meme.
There he is. God, he's so good. So good in everything he's in. Yeah, he's the same.
Same guy, but
in everything, but he's always dialed in and doing that guy perfectly.
Apparently, this was inspired by a real meeting between Bill France, Dale Earnhardt, and Jeff Bodine. Sat them down and said, you guys are crashing into each other too much.
Definitely knew who one of those guys were.
Dale.
Yeah, Dale.
you've heard the name Jeff Bodine.
Okay, I've heard of Jeff Bodine. Yeah, fair enough. Okay.
I loved this line from the Wikipedia plot summary talking about this scene. Cole and Rowdy soon become close friends after having dinner and settling their differences by smashing rental cars in a race on the beach. What better bonding experience? Rent a couple of cars, smash into each other.
This is the rental car race is the moment that I realized how derivative driven is this film. It hadn't clicked for me. I mean, I know there's tropes and there's things, but I kind of just saw them as like you know, early 90s movie trope things. But then it's like the two rivals getting in a street race that kind of is like goes awry or is weird, but it's also a bonding moment. I was like, oh, Driven is borrowing so much from this movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I just love how they're racing to the restaurant, but then they're on the beach just randomly. It's literally one shot.
Yeah.
Well, I said to Laura,
I was like, they are on the beach, it looked like, right? Like, yeah. I don't know. It didn't look like they were driving through a tunnel that was wet.
No, they almost certainly go out like onto the beach. Yeah, 100%.
And almost get into a head-on collision with a semi-tractor trailer. And it's just great stuff. It's like, I love Fred Thompson being like, you guys are driving together. You know, like... Mm-hmm.
Like that,
as if that would be a thing. Like, oh, you're gonna work out. You're gonna give your keys to two race car drivers and have one of them pick to. Like, it's just so hilariously not something that would happen. But
I mean, the rental car race in general. That's got to be that for me is a slight jump the shark moment on the movie. I mean, I would say everything up until up until that point, I was like, this movie is over the top, but like within the bounds of believability, and now we have jumped the shark.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like, it's so close to the wheelchair racing scene. Like, you know, in movie runtime, like you can pick one or the other.
Yeah,
I really
true.
Do think. And maybe it should actually be the racing on the beach, as weird as it is, like, because it puts them in the same place at least, and they have that moment, they're like, what took you guys so long? Car trouble. Yeah, car trouble.
Like, it is a bonding moment.
They had thawed with that silly little grin between Tom and Michael.
I like that they were close together, those two scenes.
Okay.
I think you need them both, because I think you need to be like, these guys are always racing. No matter what situation they're in, they're always going to be competing until they become friends, basically.
Yep.
So and now I'm dying on the hill of this this wheelchair race. I love it.
He loves it. Loves the wheelchair race. Loves the beach race. And now Cole and Rowdy are friends at this point. So we're gonna take a quick break. When we come back, there's another driver in the mix who is not friends with these guys.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Back with No Breaks. We're all friends here, as are Cole Trickle and Rowdy Burns, as we get into the second half of this movie. But right now, Cole is recovering from a concussion. So Dayland hires a hotshot rookie named Russ Wheeler, played by Cary Elwes, to fill Cole's seat until he returns. After some success with Wheeler, Dayland expands his team so that he's now fielding two teams. Guy's got two teams.
Yeah, he's got a second team, which didn't he already, wasn't he running a bit thin financially to start things out?
Yeah, like
he was
totally.
Only have one car, so where's now the money for two? I guess because the sponsorships are rolling
Hardee's.
I guess now, yeah, he's you know, he's made the leap.
He's made the leap, big time.
Okay.
Cole, though, shows signs of his old self, but quickly falls into a new rivalry with Russ. At a race in North Wilkesboro, Russ blocks Cole's path during their pit stop, later forces Cole into the outside wall on the last lap to win the race. Cole retaliates by crashing into Russ's car after the race, leading to a fight with Dalen firing both Cole and Harry in the process. What'd you think of this, Graydon? The Cole smash after the race.
Okay, well, at the time, it felt, because I had misunderstood his earlier crash, I thought it was more evidence of his like sociopathic driving style. It felt like, yeah,
this
like
guy has a
second, like a second strike here, kind of, you know. But I guess in retrospect, I have to revisit that.
I don't think you do. I mean, clearly he's a sociopath.
Yeah.
Like who after
the
race is over and then he literally gets the tires changed.
Yeah.
So he could smash into
this is a bad
his boss's other car.
Yeah,
right?
It is bad.
It's a there's a lot of sociopathic stuff in Cole's character.
It's pretty unhinged.
And can I also say as well that when he first meets Russ, Cole is incredibly rude to him, you know? Like, he's on the phone. He's trying to get to – he's trying to find out the doctor's number.
He calls and asks for the doctor's home address, which they promptly give him.
Yes.
Which I also thought was insane.
Right.
It was ridiculous.
Right. Is the administrator a race fan? Great. Give out this private information so I can – creepily stalk this woman and fill her apartment, and somehow they all got in all of the flowers and gifts and whatever he showered her with.
Unacceptable with, levels
completely,
of like
completely.
Informational security by the hospital.
Yeah, but getting back to him being on the phone and meeting Russ, like Duval comes up, hey, this is Russ, he's going to be filling in, and Cruz basically just dismisses him, and then there's another weird moment where he leans in, Russ is like. I know I'm not going to be able to fill your shoes or whatever he says. But he was nothing but nice to Cole. Russ was, I mean. It was just...
No, you're right. I had forgotten, you know, because I watched this movie Friday, so you know, a lot's happened since then, that actually he does have his tires changed so he can go out there and spear him.
That is a good grip.
And it's especially insane... you know, choice. I can't think of anything comparable in the history of motorsports, although NASCAR drivers have done some wild post-race stuff.
According to IMDb, this is based on an actual event during a 1987 All-Star race at Charlotte, North Carolina between drivers Bill Elliott and Dale Earnhardt.
My God. Wow. Wait, who hit who there?
I don't know who, but just based on the fact that Bill Elliott is written first, I'm guessing he was the crasher. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. Beats me, but...
banned for life, if you did
You would
this,
think so.
Right?
You would think that this would end your racing career. That this, it would be completely unacceptable.
I think I'm with Dalen here, firing both of them.
Yeah.
Both Cole and Harry.
But, do you think Harry was, like, an accomplice to it? I guess the race was over and he changed his tires knowing he was going to go do something reckless.
Yeah, there's no reason to change your tires after a race.
No.
You got to shut it down right then and there.
Correct.
But you got to control your guy. I mean, that's what it boils down to.
Yeah.
You're all right, though, JD. Russ Wheeler, to me, he just seems like a devious kind of driver out there. He wasn't particularly mean to Cole or anything like that. He just did well while Cole couldn't drive.
Yeah. And then I get that once Cole comes back, he doesn't just cede the place back. He's a competitor and he wants to win. I think that he honestly, while, you know, sure, Carrie's got a smarmy look about him, actually is fairly fine. And, you know, ethically is above board in terms of the way he carries himself.
I mean, I guess Cole was issued that warning, like, you're not rubbing anymore, otherwise you're out of here. But that was between Cole and what's his
Big
favorite?
John.
Yeah. So, so maybe he was trolling him a bit. I mean, look, I mean, Russ is a colossal douche. There's no doubt about that. But I don't know. Cole was pretty rude to him is all I'm saying.
No doubt.
Yeah, I would say he was rude. And then he
tried to kill
him. Then he tried to kill him.
He tried to murder him.
So, two strikes there. Cole's back up to two strikes. He was rude. Then he tried to kill him. So that's back up.
So Cole's got his on-track stuff going down. Meanwhile, Rowdy's recovery from the crash is not going well, and he learns that he has to undergo brain surgery to fix a broken blood vessel. So he asks Cole to drive his car at the Daytona 500 because that's the only way that his sponsor will pay for the next season?
I guess that the car itself needs to perform at a certain level. Like, he's got to finish high enough or with enough points or something in the standings, so he wants Cole to go out there and do that.
But
for him.
What was he saying? That I guess I didn't really follow this, that, like, the sponsor, Exxon, I suppose, paid for Rowdy? Like, or they're paying for the car?
I think it's, like, a bit of both, right? It's, like, yeah. that like, this guy's drive is dependent on him. Like, the sponsorship is dependent on a certain degree of performance.
Sure.
So it's on the driver to, like, deliver that performance. And if not, like, the sponsor would drop out, but also you'd get fired for failing to make. I think that's the idea. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And he's got like a $10 million home to build or something like that.
Yeah, he's building a huge house in a beautiful lake kind of farm area. I mean, it's incredible. It's lovely. Yeah.
That boat that they're on is ridiculous for the lake. Like, it's like a cigarette boat.
Yeah. Right.
And they're on just a lake, just a random little lake in North Carolina or wherever they were.
Out there with his very lovely wife, who just kind of comes in from the side. That was did you notice that when they're walking the field, and then, like, she just emerges into the shot?
Yeah. I was over there.
She had been standing a mere 10 feet away as they walked through the yard. I thought that was, like, a great, like, little moment.
Oh, hey, guys.
Yeah, and then, like, I think also they introduce her at that moment there, but they're, like, already at his home. You'd think that, like, she probably would have met them already.
No, my wife's outside. We'll walk by her later. You can meet her. So Cole reluctantly agrees to drive the Exxon car, and he also convinces Harry to return as his crew chief. Harry is scared, and Cole is scared. They're both scared here. Harry, I guess, is scared because he was the crew chief when Buck Brotherton died at Daytona the previous year. And Harry thinks it's his fault, right? At one point, he says that Buck had a massive heart attack when they're talking about him crashing into the wall, which we don't see.
He does and he doesn't. He, like, denies it's his fault, right? Like, he denies it, but
he's
clearly
still, like,
is
I made a mistake
bit,
letting him get in the car.
Right. He's wearing it on his shoulders a little bit. He's carrying some grief or some guilt about it, even if he claims that he had a heart attack out there.
Very unclear what actually happened.
Very unclear.
In the crash. But Harry definitely holds some of the responsibility close to his heart, as you can tell. But Cole says, "I'm more scared of being nothing than being hurt." I thought that was a great line from Cole Trickle. So he gets back in the car. Harry builds up the car. During the race, Cole's car, however, is spun out by Russ and suffers a malfunctioning transmission. But good luck. The good thing with the malfunction here, your car can only go as fast as possible. Imagine if it would have been the other way. When the transmission breaks, sorry, you're only in first gear. Luckily for him, he was only in high gear. And thanks to the combined efforts of Harry and Dalen's pit crews, they managed to fix the problem, get Cole back on the lead lap on the final lap. Russ thinks Cole is going to attempt his signature slingshot maneuver from the outside, but Cole tricks him with the crossover switcheroo, overtaking him from the inside to win his first Daytona 500. What did you think of the growth from this?
Oh, no, he's
driver?
Going to the inside or something like that. He yells. I mean, he's taking.
Oh, I know him. He's going to the outside.
Well, but doesn't he, when he does finally go to the inside, he's taken completely off guard by that fact,
yes.
Isn't he?
Yeah, he totally is.
Yeah, which is.
Set him up.
You know, which is a brilliant move, and I love that for Cole. I love that he's, you know, added to his toolkit. He's grown so much. I mean, he's learned the vocabulary.
Not an
he's
idiot.
He's learned
anymore.
To manage the tires, which was a big thing he struggled with early. And now he's learned to go to both the inside and the outside. He's learned a lot.
JD, were you surprised to see Cole pull this one off here at the end?
So shocked. so shocked. But it's funny. You mentioned, I guess, yesterday you were reading out loud some facts, some goofs, if you will, about how they forgot to shoot Cole Trickle going over the finish line, and you don't see it. You don't winning the race. You see the checkered flag. You see them rounding the corner with the checkered flag in the foreground, and then they just say, Cole Trickle wins. But you don't see him go over the finish line, and that was incredible to me. Like, I would have noticed. I don't think I would have noticed if you hadn't mentioned it the day before, but goddamn. Has that ever happened in a racing movie? I didn't notice that.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't notice that.
I don't think I noticed either, but once you see it, you're like, oh, yeah, you should.
Yeah, but now that I think back, it's odd.
But you can see why it would slip their mind. Apparently, there were massive, like, production overruns here. The budget went crazy. It took, like, four times as long to make the movie as they thought it was going to be, so.
Okay.
Guess one just slipped by.
Fair enough.
Sure, it was the climactic scene of the movie, but
sure, it's like the money shot. Yeah, but I guess every once in a while you forget. Every once in a while you leave it out. Yeah.
Cole wins. He drives into Victory Lane where he and his pit crew celebrate with Claire. He approaches Harry, Cole does, sitting alone. Harry is, who's lost for words. Cole asks Harry to walk with him, and Harry agrees, challenging him to a foot race to Victory Lane. And here's what it looks like. These two guys smiling ear to ear, rocking the mellow yellow.
God, the mellow yellow.
To Victory Lane. What a hilarious.
The mellow yellow jumpsuit is solid.
Oh, these look great, man.
Yeah. These are great fits. Tall hat.
Oh, very tall.
Wide
very,
collar.
Very
great
tall.
Fit. I love it. I'm a little.
Celebration.
Did we skip the scene where Claire and him, where she wants to get out of the car?
Yeah.
Save that for random moments. We'll do it in the next block.
We'll save it.
Yeah. Let's talk about the ending of this movie. He wins. Cole Trickle wins.
I never
won
saw
Daytona.
What are the odds?
Complete redemption.
Yeah.
For Harry Hogg, whose driver died there last year.
Yep.
He ain't sad anymore. He's fine.
Yeah.
Sure. Are we going to check in with his son who's on the team? Might be emotional. Nah. Sprinting over to Victory Lane.
it's all good now, man.
It's all good.
Cole Trickle, tried to kill another driver only a few races earlier. But, honestly, it's all good. I think his buddy's still hospitalized. And there's really no resolution to Rowdy's ailments.
True.
But, it's all good, man. They won Daytona.
That's what they set out to do.
Another sort of part that was washed over was the fact that the engine of the car was donated by Randy Quaid's character, right?
Yeah.
Why was that part of that?
Oh, yeah. Randy Quaid's the hero. He saves the day.
Yeah.
He saves the day.
And then he helps them push the car out. Let me ask you this. As a car guy, Graydon.
Yeah.
What's the highest or what's the lowest gear? I guess the highest gear. Obviously, the idea was push the car, pop the clutch, and then we're
Yeah, you can
business.
Bump start a car. You can bump start something.
Obviously, you can do it in first. You can do it in reverse. I've done it in reverse. I've done it in first. I've done it in second.
I've done it in second. I've never done it in a gear higher than second.
Yeah.
I used to have to bump start my old motorcycle sometimes, and sometimes it was better to do it in second than in first.
Yeah.
But actually, I've never done that in top gear.
Yeah. The highest I've is the third gear for me on a motorcycle, but going down a hill, going fast.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think that would have happened.
I don't know if it would have worked.
If they were stuck in a high gear, just as many people as you had back there pushing, you would never get that speed.
What do we think Randy Quaid's motivation is for saving the day here and jumping in to help out? I mean, is it just he loves racing? He wants to see.
That's a great question.
He wants to see a driver get, because at this point their relationship, I would say, is as fractured as it's ever been.
He fired him.
He fired him. he tried to kill his driver.
Yes.
He in general, I would say it's been a very difficult relationship to date. So the idea that he'd help him out in a pinch.
Earlier in the movie, he does mention, he's saying, you guys got to get your shit together. I believe in cold trickle, though. Like he said, he still says, "I believe in cold trickle." I, you know, I'm on cold trickle's team, but I'm also starting this other rival team. But he still says, "Guys, come on, let's go." So maybe he has a soft spot in his heart for those two. Maybe
he must have a soft spot. Yeah. Otherwise, it's like, because at this point, Cole's driving for a completely different team, right? I don't think there is. Is there a relationship between Dayland and
Rowdy's team?
I don't know.
Right, he's driving for Rowdy's team, which is also and I guess Robert Duvall just comes over because he's his guy. I guess it's he's got a soft spot for him because that's the explanation.
He's just got a soft spot for him. Of course, fair enough. Wants to be the guy who found the next guy.
Who doesn't have a soft spot for Cole Trickle?
Honestly, in this movie, I'm like, this is Pete Cruz. This is great stuff. You mentioned that entrance, JD, when he comes to the track on the motorcycle.
Yeah.
That's one of like the top Tom Cruise looks there.
Like he rode right off the set of Top Gun and
This is
of
exists
of
in
Thunder.
The same cinematic universe. Top Gun cinematic universe.
Right?
So that is Days of Thunder recapped. When we come back, we'll talk about some of our favorite random moments, like this daredevil stunt from Nicole Kidman, maybe some of our favorite quotes, and we'll rate this thing.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Back with No Breaks, we just recap the plot of 1990's Days of Thunder. Now we're going to talk about some of our favorite random moments and give this thing a rating. Graydon, get us started by telling me about Nicole Kidman jumping out of a car at 80 plus miles per hour.
But I actually forget what happened. How did they get into this scenario where they're in – are they in a taxi?
No. Tom Cruise is dropping her off at – the hotel. They're in the driveway of the hotel.
Okay.
Cabbie behind them starts getting annoyed, impatient, honking the horn. Tom Cruise then backs his car into the cab.
Right. That's why I have taxi written. I was trying to remember why did I have that written down in my notes.
And the cab driver flees, right?
And maybe understandably.
Yeah. It's like, there's a sociopath in front of me, so I'm going to flee. And Tom Cruise chases the cab driver. Nicole Kidman demands to get out of the car.
A reasonable request. Demand.
Yes.
At this time.
And then she appears to open the door when the car is going very fast.
Very fast.
But then they cut to her getting out of the car when it's completely stopped. But... yeah, she was getting out of that car, and it was going fast.
Can I just be honest with you? Yeah, this is a favorite random moment of mine. And you know what this also is? A deal breaker. Like, right. In my relationship. Like, this is this sort of incident when dating someone. I mean, this might be a deal breaker in my marriage. It might be a deal breaker in anything. But certainly if you were just dating somebody and they pulled something like this, I would be like, I think we need to see other people.
Yeah.
No?
A red flag at the very least.
I think a big red stop sign.
Yeah. Nicole Kidman's character does not have the best judgment. She's a neurosurgeon, right? Or she's a brain doctor.
She's a brain doctor.
But we see her within 10 minutes of meeting her, she's on the back of a motorcycle with no helmet on. There's no brain doctor that would ever. I don't know any doctor that would even ride a motorcycle, let alone without a helmet. I mean, forget it.
Agreed. And like he basically, you know, he commits something approximating sexual assault when they first meet, and she proceeds to like him anyways.
Yeah.
Again.
Then he tracks down her
a
home
deal breaker. Yeah, he stalks her. Deal breaker.
Yeah,
he
goes into
has a crazy road rage incident and endangers her as he attempts to like run down a taxi driver who had been honking at him. Deal breaker. I mean, there are so many deal breakers out there.
Nicole, you should have known.
Cole,
my favorite Nicole Kidman line in this one is when. I guess it's when Cole's having trouble with his vision, right? And they're like, yeah, just tell him it's a concussion. just tell him whatever. I can't see. Just tell him it's a concussion. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, concussions don't matter.
Yeah.
Another terrible decision by her character was to wear a completely crisp white pantsuit to a NASCAR race. the whitest suit I've ever seen on a person. She's luminous. And then, you know, and I obviously is there so that she can be next to Tom, who's covered in soot.
Not the only instance in which there's a suit makes an unexpected appearance, because I also noted that when Cole visits Rowdy in the hospital, he's also in a suit. For some reason, he's in a suit with no tie.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, but why? Like, why this suit? And like,
suit.
It's like not on
he
brand.
Wants wearing a suit.
It's not in character.
No.
Like, it's not like, where did the suit come from and why? It's not, it's like, it's totally out of character.
That's a good point. Just a random suit.
Yeah, it was a totally random suit.
Yeah.
I think that they were just like, he's been wearing too many jean jackets. Got to get him in something fancy here.
In this movie, I would go so far as to claim there is no such thing as too many jean jackets in a movie like this.
Another good scene was, I forget which race it's after, but Cole brings his car back. It's completely destroyed except for one panel. One panel is fine. John C. Reilly's character, Buck Bretherton, in one of his rare lines in the movie, is like, oh, look, one panel we don't have to fix. So then Robert Duvall just kicks it and says, don't want you getting soft on me. Great stuff. I thought
John C. Reilly, also pretty early career. Very early career appearance.
He's got a bit of a Robert Duvall where he still looks – he looks the same age in this movie. As
Robert Duvall,
yeah.
Margot Martindale, John C. Reilly, Tom Cruise.
Yeah,
I mean, honestly, a lot of people who like kind of for the last 30 years have looked the same.
That's a great call.
Yeah.
You got anything else, JD? Any other random moments?
I always notice when a tall actress is next to a short actor. Nicole Kidman is only wearing flats in this movie ever, and a few Apple boxes were used. Same thing with Top Gun, Kelly McGillis and Tom Cruise.
Because he's pretty short, right?
He's a short guy, for sure. Which, you know what? I say let him be short and let the woman be tall. Why not? Let's normalize this.
100% agree to agree.
Yeah.
Could not agree more. It's fine.
Yes. There,
it shows confidence on both their parts.
Agree. Totally agree.
Yeah.
I also love nobody can ever be on the phone in Hollywood. You know, just be on the phone. There's always something like there's two times that I can think of that Tom Cruise is on the phone. Once is when he meets Russ for the first time. So he's trying to talk on the phone and something else is happening.
Sure.
And then the second time is when he's talking to Nicole Kidman for the first time on the phone. And he's in an office that everybody seems to want to get into, right? Like the door is closed and the guy wants a coffee and he has to make the coffee for him. You can't have in Hollywood back then in movies, you couldn't have anyone just straight up talking on the phone. It had to be action happening at all times. You guys notice this?
Yeah, for sure.
It's a good call.
It's definitely weird. Yes.
Yeah.
Like, this is going to be so boring. People just talking. Put some stuff happening in the background.
Yeah, exactly. Have them doing something. Like, we got to be moving at all times. And then my final note is just I know it's NASCAR, but goddamn, the product placement in this was hilarious. The best was the massive Coke machine in their office that literally takes up a third of the screen. It's just the Coke logo, a lit Coke logo, just staring you right at the face while, Randy Quaid is saying, we look like a monkey fucked
a football.
<Yeah. laughs>
That's pretty funny because he's complaining about sponsors being there too, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I remember this movie, I do remember the marketing of it from being a little kid, because I feel like there were, you could get Hardee's like Days of Thunder cups and that kind of stuff. This is no doubt where I learned what Mellow Yellow even was.
Okay.
As the the Mountain Dew.
Yeah, I don't, but I didn't. Did you drink Mellow Yellow as a kid? I did.
Probably, but I mean, I would say Mountain Dew more often.
Yeah, I definitely drink Mountain Dew more often. Yeah. The only other thing that note that I have if before we go to our ratings here is I just want to say I had a note that the music slaps and that Hans Zimmer killed it. I think he's firing on all cylinders here.
Yeah, you know, I think
the soundtrack worked for
me. There's a little like 80s rockish to me at some points, in general.
But
I mean,
but I liked that fact.
Yes.
It felt appropriate. It's because it is part of the broader Top Gun cinematic universe. It all has the same like ambient music, you know, in that whole world.
What a career he went on to have, Hans Zimmer. Like, just, I never would have guessed that he would have the composer career that he went on to have. Like, he's still working today on the biggest.
Yeah. What are his bangers? Let's go. Like, what are his?
Well,
top?
He does all the Nolan stuff, I think. He does. He does all the like superhero stuff, like all that Nolan, stuff. Like, he's the John Williams of our time, I think.
Wow. Wow.
I would say.
Wow. You're not wrong. I mean, this is serious stuff.
He did Top Gun Maverick.
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy.
Woo.
He's doing Boss Baby. He did both the Boss Babies.
James Bond movies.
Dune. He does literally everything.
He did both the Boss Babies?
Yeah, he did Family Business and the OG. It's crazy, man.
Wow.
Hans Zimmer's really out here. I liked. I really like how all of the driver names are just porn star names. Rowdy Burns, Harry Hogg, Cole Trickle, Buck Bretherton, and Big John. Come on. Those are some sexy, sexy names.
Harry Hogg is a little too on the nose.
I was just laughing when they said, why Hogg? Why Hogg would you choose?
Mm. It's a last name. People got...
Harry Holmes.
People got the Howard last name Hogg.
Holmes is a big porn name.
I know, John JD. Holmes. I know.
Maybe Harry it's Hogg, maybe it's a tribute to Boss Hogg from Dukes of Hazzard.
Okay. Okay, I like that argument.
I mean, it feels plausible at the very least.
Yeah. Hogg feels very Southern.
In fact, I'm a little surprised we didn't have a more explicit Dukes of Hazzard reference at some point.
Yeah. You know,
they also love the Confederate flag.
A car with the Confederate flag hood or something like that.
I'll also say the styling I thought in this movie was awesome. Like, I think everybody looks perfect, and it's very much of its time. It looks like the 90s. The hats are very tall.
Very tall.
Got denim jackets everywhere.
Yep.
We got work jackets everywhere. I feel like they also gave Robert Duvall a different hat in every single scene.
Which I love.
Exactly.
Like, as a guy
just walking out the door, grab a hat, throw it on.
Has a lot of different hats and is always throwing on a different hat. I thought that
was very cool. And then the cast is legitimately great here. Tom Cruise, Robert Duvall, Nicole Kidman, Michael Rooker is Rowdy Burns, who has become a great character actor, and then John C. Reilly and Cary Elwes there, not doing all that much. But yeah, those are things I liked.
Yeah, not to mention Fred Thompson and Margot Martindale.
Not to mention Fred Thompson and Margot Martindale.
So there's a lot of stacked.
Let's rate this bad boy. Start with you, Graydon. What do you think?
Okay.
Rate it what you want.
Originally, I was gonna come in a little harsh because it was a little bit of an emotional roller coaster for me watching this, and at times I had thought I was gonna give it a very bad rating, and at other times I was, you know, I was more into it. I'm gonna go like a 4 out of 10.
4 out of 10.
Wow.
I just didn't. Is that high or low to you?
That's actually surprisingly low to me.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
I'm going a little higher.
I just thought it was. It was the acting. Okay, the acting good. The action, mostly good. I thought the writing was pretty rough. I thought the screenplay was a pretty big weak point. And that always is something that a weak screenplay is something I have a hard time getting past. It's a personal thing.
Well, in that case, your 4 makes sense because to me, the script and the screenplay probably like the weakest part of this. Because I'm with you. I think like some of the performances are fine to good. I don't think there's anybody like – super bad out there. I would have shown, you know, we could have seen some more John Z. Reilly. Cary Elwes probably could have done a little bit more. They could have gave Nicole Kidman a little bit more stuff to do as well. But at least they were fine out there. But you're right. I mean, you know what's going to happen at the end of the movie when the beginning of the movie starts. So there's some clunkers dialogue-wise as well. But what are you thinking, JD? I think you're going to actually give this one a pretty solid score.
Yeah, I'm surprising myself because I agree with you. The script is god awful, but I think that the director and the cast and the crew pull off most of it. Like I was entertained. Most of the time when we go back and watch these old movies, I go, oh god, this is going to be rough because I remember liking this movie and and it's not going to hold up. I'm not saying it holds up, but I liked it. I had fun watching this movie. Maybe it was because the last thing we watched was Driven, which I absolutely
well,
hated.
It was so bad. There's no two ways about it. This is meaningfully better than Driven.
And I think I gave Driven a negative score, maybe. It was
bad. You said it was a zero out of a million. Yeah. I think might have been your exact joke. Might have been your exact language.
That sounds about right.
So,
I didn't hate it. I'm going to give this a six.
Okay.
I would recommend this movie.
I'm right there with you. I'm 6 of 10 as well. Me and you are the audience score right here.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, I'm closer to the critics.
You're more
score
of the critics score
as a bit of a, you know, a literary type. No, I think that I don't know. I maybe that's it. It's like I enjoyed it. I had fun with it. It wasn't like painful to watch, but I'm just shy of recommending it, which is where I think my four is landed.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I think that's a totally fair call. But I'm with you, JD. Six, and I would recommend it. And I would watch this again. Like, I turn on I'm a Fire Stick guy, so I turn on my Fire Stick, and I still see Driven up there as, like, one of my most recent purchases. I'm like, oh, my. Am I going to have to see the screenshot for Driven every time I turn on my TV? Sad times. This, though, watchable for sure.
Totally.
I think the action feels like pretty real to me because they film so much stuff actually at races. The cars feel fast. Like, I see a lot of stuff in reviews that are people complaining about, like, the special effects and stuff, and I'm like, what special effects?
Yeah.
It feels like this is
minimal.
All real movie
the
stuff
only,
that's happening.
The only just blatantly unrealistic thing, I think, is the rental car chase beach scene. That's where it's like, okay, well, now we're what the hell's going on? But I would say the race scenes themselves, well, certainly way more realistic than Driven.
Yeah.
Which were, I think, in retrospect, maybe even worse than we might have even thought. We might have said at the time.
Yeah, totally.
I think at the time we were maybe even being nice about those.
this makes Driven look so bad when you watch it. It's like Driven would be the equivalent to when you just type a random string of words into one of those AI art generators and it puts out a picture that's like kind of what you described.
Right.
If you put in like racing movie with big Hollywood stars and crashes, you would get Driven.
Yeah.
But this was actually solid. A good bad movie is what I call this. And that's a win for me. So
okay. Fair
a
enough.
4, a 6, and a 6. You add it all together. 16 divided by. It's too hard to figure out. 5.3.
So that's barely a recommendation.
5.3.
Barely recommended from No Breaks, but certainly recommended. And honestly, we're going to talk grading up a point, I do believe. But we want to hear from you, so let us know down below in the YouTube comments or on Twitter what you thought of Days of Thunder. And we will check in, I guess, next week. We got a race coming this weekend going to Brazil.
We do. We got Quali Friday, sprint race Saturday, race on Sunday. 3 days of racing action.
Three days of thunder, you could say.
3 days of thunder.
That means we'll be back next week to talk about the Brazilian Grand Prix. Until then, Clipper Bros.
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I hear the music in the background. I started saying it.
That's me. Yeah.
No, it's also me.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Be faster, be last, race fans.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.